Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
I'll bet you're ready for some football. Well, let's talk some football history, because in this episode, we discuss the early edition of the Washington franchise. The Yellow Jackets rise again in a new form as we remember the birthdays of gridiron greats like Catchy, Miracle Juice, and A Very Hard Man to Stop. And it's all coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we are podcasting from America's North Shore, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So in taking the snap from the sportshistorynetwork.com and handing off to pigskindispatch.com, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of pigskindispatch.com, and welcome to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history and a place where you can get your great gridiron of yesteryear nostalgia day by day, 365 days a year, and you can binge listen all you'd like, because we have plenty of episodes on pigskindispatch.com or your favorite podcast provider or sportshistorynetwork.com for you to listen to and catch up, because it's always history, it's always relevant, and we do that very well on the pigskindispatch.com for the gridiron game. So let's go to our football history headlines for this July 9th episode, and we're going to start off in 1932 on July 9th in the Boston Braves, who became the Redskins, who became the Washington Redskins franchise, is granted by the NFL. A group headed by George Preston Marshall that included Vincent Bendix, Jay O'Brien, and Dorlan Doyle were given the remnants of the now defunct Newark Tornadoes that folded at the end of the 1930 season, according to the sportsteamhistory.com website. The professional rights of the franchise go back further than that even. According to Wikipedia, in 1929, Ole Hogsrud, the owner of the Duluth Eskimos, sold his NFL franchise rights for the Eskimos to Piggy Smalley, and a wholesale meat salesman and sports promoter from Orange, who named his franchise the Orange Tornadoes. The team struggled to a 3-5-4 record and then decided to move to Newark for a fresh start in New Jersey. The next season, the team received more bad breaks as head coach Jack Depler left the Newark Tornadoes to buy the Dayton Triangles and promptly moved them to become the Brooklyn Dodgers, raiding many of his former players of the Tornadoes to fill his roster. The Newark squad went through three different head coaches in 1930. Now, back to the Boston group receiving the old Newark team remnants. Well, none of the Tornadoes team members ever joined the Braves, and that didn't start playing until a couple seasons removed from the Jersey-based Twisters team. The team lost $46,000 in revenue the first season, hence all of his partners bailed on him, leaving Marshall as the sole owner. George was a larger-than-life showman who thrived on attention, and the group originally named the team after the Boston Braves baseball team that played there. But after very little support, Marshall knew that he had to change things up a little bit. Prior to the 1933 season, the nickname was changed to the Redskins to give his team their own identity. The team had limited success in Boston and didn't get much support from the community. The lack of support by both the fans and the media really came to a head when Marshall noticed that a local field hockey team was getting more press coverage than his beloved Redskins. This infuriated Marshall, so a change of surroundings seemed to be in order, and he moved to the nation's capital and changed the course of the franchise as they were crowned the NFL champions in their inaugural year in the District of Columbia. It is for good reasons that the NFL does not consider the Redskins to be a continuation of the Tornadoes, just as it does not consider the Tornadoes to be a continuation of the Duluth Eskimos. And how this all comes about is that the Washington Redskins are the Washington football team as of 2020 and the season of 2021. That story goes round and round, and it's football history, and that's what we love. And for more football history, we have some more July 9th, 1933. the Frankfurt Yellow Jackets are sold and renamed the Eagles as the franchise's move to Philadelphia. According to our interview with our friend Upton Bell on our February 25th bonus podcast to tribute his father, the former NFL commissioner Burt Bell, Upton shared that his father and mother, the Broadway starlet Frances Upton, walked into a Philadelphia bankruptcy courtroom and walked out owning the Yellow Jackets. Upton told us that since his father lost most of his own wealth in the 1929 stock market crash, his new bride provided the funds to purchase a newly named team in the city of brotherly love. During a walk shortly thereafter, they went past a sign advertising the purchase of U.S. Liberty bonds, which were adorned with America's national bird. Burt Bell then looked at his new bride and said something to the effect, "That's it. Our new team will be called the Eagles." And the Bells owned the Eagles until 1940, when the famous Pennsylvania polka occurred, where Burt Bells and the Steelers owner Art Rooney did a series of transactions where in the end, Rooney and Bell were co-owners of the Steelers and the Eagles were purchased by Alexis Thompson. And the rest is history. It goes on and on from there. Another one in that those NFC East teams have a very rich and varied history that came from some early teams in the NFL. And speaking of that, we are going to be going in depth here real soon in the next few weeks of starting to look at some of those early NFL teams and APFA teams, before the NFL was called the NFL. Look at some of those early pro teams that have their roots in some of our other teams. And we're going to get some experts on and some historians and authors that know a lot about these teams and really dive into them a little bit. And perhaps we'll find somebody that can talk to us about the Frankfurt Yellow Jackets because they have a rich history. And all those teams, Pottsville Maroons, the Canton Bulldogs, the Massillon Tigers, the Rock Island Independents, Buffalo All-Americans, many, many more of them. There's a lot of them, and we can have a lot of special episodes. So we're going to get into that and have some fun with that coming up here in the next few weeks. And we'll have try to have that on every once a week or every couple weeks with an expert on there to talk about that, in addition to all our other podcasts here on PigskinDispatch.com. Now, let's go to our newspapers.com. Football history headline of the day, and it comes from the July 10th, 2018 Raleigh, North Carolina News and Observer, which printed this headline: ownership of the Panthers officially changes hands. July 9th, 2018, billionaire David Tepper purchases ownership of the Carolina Panthers for an NFL record $2.275 billion, with a B, dollars. Tepper was quoted as saying, "I am thrilled to begin this new era of Carolina Panthers football, and I'm humbled by the overwhelming excitement and support for the team." The new owner is the founder and CEO of a global hedge fund, Appaloosa Management, and had a net worth of over $11 billion at the time of purchase. He had just recently relinquished his minority stake of 5% in the Pittsburgh Steelers by selling it so as to be clear to invest in the Panthers. Tepper promised to keep the Panthers in Charlotte, in the city that they started in 1993, and the people of Charlotte and North Carolina were overjoyed to get David Tepper as their owner and to keep the Panthers right there in the Carolinas. Now, if you want to be able to read through some old articles in the newspapers, like we did through the Raleigh News and Observer today, you need to check out newspapers.com. At newspapers.com, you can get access to over 640 million pages worth of news from all the English-speaking countries, I believe. That includes the U.S., Canada, England, Scotland, Australia, Ireland, you name it, New Zealand, and other English-speaking countries. And there's even some non-English-speaking countries that their newspapers are on there. 640 million pages. This is probably more like 650 million pages now because they're adding newspapers all the time. I'm getting notifications from there. So you can get a free one-week subscription to newspapers.com by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. And with a paid subscription, you'll also be helping to support the production of this and other Sports History Network shows. So get those free 7 days to start off with on us, sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. And I think you're going to like it so much that you will want to get a paid subscription. Because remember, you're going to get news all the way back to 1798. That's a few hundred years here, folks. That is a lot of news. That's where they're coming up with the over 640 million pages worth of news. Well worth it. I think you'll enjoy it. Try it out. Now let's go to our Hall of Fame birthdays for this July 9th. And we're going to start off in a way back machine, not 1798, but how about 1874 in Brookville, Maryland. George Brook, the great fullback of Swarthmore College from 1889 to 1892, and later at Penn from 1893 to 1895. He entered the world on that day. Yes, this youngster played college football for 7 seasons in an era where there were no rules to prevent that. The NFF records that George was a 2-time All-America selection, and Brook was described by Casper Whitney as a very hard man to stop. He strikes the line with an almost irresistible force. The records of the Swarthmore squad with Brook in the lineup was 21-14, and for the Quakers of Penn, their win-loss record stood at 38-3 with George. The National Football Foundation selected George Brook for entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1969. July 9th, 1892, Bloomfield, Indiana. Elmer Oliphant. He was the halfback that played for both Purdue as a walk-on and Army. Elmer Oliphant, according to the UPI article in the Indianapolis Star, had the nickname of Catchy. Elmer won an unprecedented 7 letters while at Purdue and then added 17 more as a cadet at West Point. The standout athlete played basketball, baseball, and track in addition to football and even tried his hand at boxing. In fact, he is the first person ever to have won letters in 4 different sports for the Army team. What's really amazing is that his gridiron exploits were even great before he even played in the college ranks. Catchy once scored 60 points in one high school game in a 128-0 romp as his Linton High squad dispatched rival Sullivan High School in football. Oliphant went to Purdue and set a scoring record there too, as he put up 43 points on a scoreboard against Rose Pauley in a 19-12 tilt, set a Boilermaker record in a 91-0 triumph. Elmer ended up with 135 career points at Purdue and then added 300 more while with Army, and he was named to the All-America team twice. Elmer Oliphant received the great honor of being selected for inclusion into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1955. And Elmer stayed in the Army for 4 more years. And after his discharge, he played 1 season professionally with the Buffalo All-Americans and then coached 2 seasons at Union College in New York. July 9th, 1912, Talia Lebedon, the famous LSU halfback from 1933 to the 1935 season, Abe Mickel was born. This player performed so many amazing plays in extreme situations that he was dubbed as the Miracle. The National Football Foundation's bio on Abe tells us how much wondrous plays there were done by his passing the football. In that era, it was not a passer-friendly ball like it is today. It had a much wider girth, and it was fondly called a melon ball. Not friendly to the forward pass much at all. The Miracle Mickel, though, he developed a style that became very effective in tossing this big leather egg down the field. The NFF tells us that in 1933, Abe managed touchdown heaves of 48 and 57 yards. His 27-yard TD aerial that year provided a 7-7 tie with rival Vanderbilt. As a junior in 1934, Mickel and fellow Hall of Famer Gaynell Tinsley combined for one of Southern football's greatest aerial duels, each capturing All-American mention. When the two connected as a last-ditch effort on a 65-yard touchdown pass to tie Southern Methodist 14-all, they set a record for the longest scoring pass ever in the South. The record stood for several years, and the Fighting Tigers finished a 7-2-2 record for that 1934 campaign. All told, in 32 games at LSU, Mickel played an important role leading the Tigers to a 23-4-5 record. Abe Mickel was a halfback from LSU that was selected in the College Football Hall of Fame in 1967. July 9th, 1918, Adel, Iowa. Niall Kinnick, the Ohio starting halfback from 1937 to 1939, arrived in the world. This great athlete was full of surprises and never ceased to amaze sports fans. According to the footballfoundation.org website, Niall was the most outstanding male athlete for 1939, despite the amazing season that baseball legend Joe DiMaggio had that same year. Kinnick was the picture of football brilliance that season, leading Iowa to a 6-1-win, 1-loss, 1-tie record while running, passing, scoring or kicking for 107 of the Hawkeyes' 130 points. Nile led the nation in kickoff return yardage with 377 yards and was second in interceptions with 8. And Nile Kinnick won the Heisman Trophy in 1939 as a consensus All-American halfback, as he also claimed the rights to the Maxwell and the Walter Camp trophies too. Mr. Kinnick was enshrined in the College Football Hall of Fame in 1951. And the Hawkeyes, well, they renamed their stadium after the star back in 1972 to Kinnick Stadium. He suffered an untimely death serving his country in World War II. July 9, 1947, San Francisco, California. O.J. Simpson, the legendary Southern California running back of the seasons in 1967 and 68. O.J. Simpson is a Pro Football Hall of Fame running back that played for the Buffalo Bills. And Simpson held the NFL single season rushing record of 2,003 yards until Eric Dickerson broke that record a few decades later. He was known as the Juice, and he played college ball at USC. And according to the NFF, in 1968, O.J. carried the ball 355 times for 1,709 yards and 22 touchdowns, while leading USC to a 9-0-1 regular season record, equaling or bettering a long list of USC records there. Again, he was named to scores of All-American teams and was granted 21 awards, including the Rose Bowl MVP, the Heisman Trophy, Maxwell Award. And after winning the Heisman Trophy in 1968, the College Football Hall of Fame inducted him into their museum in 1983's class. Juice went into broadcasting and even acted after his NFL career was over. That is, until he infamously was tried and convicted of the murder of his estranged wife and her friend. Now, that is some football history that's a lot of football history for the middle of July. It's not even the season, but we have so many great players that are Hall of Famers that are born on this day, July 9th, and all the great rich football history with the franchises and these old franchises and their storied tales that we can tell that had effect on July 9th. And of course, the Carolina Panthers being bought by David Tepper, the billionaire that promised to keep the Carolina Panthers intact in Charlotte, where they were founded in 1993. Some great football history. You can catch more football history all the time. PigskinDispatch.com. It's open 24/7. It's always there for you to do your reading. We podcast a history podcast just like the one you're listening to each and every day of the year. It is timed with every day of the year. Plus, we have 3 or 4 bonus podcasts. We have our Football by Numbers is running really strong right now. Make sure you check those out. We have authors on, we have historians on, and we try to bring you every angle of football history, not just the pro level, not just the college level, not just the high school level, but all the levels, all the leagues, all around the world, and as many great positive players that we can discuss. That's how we want to bring it to you and present it. You can also find us on SportsHistoryNetwork.com, and all my buddies over there, we have about 20 podcasts running over there right now on all kinds of great sports history, and I'm sure you'll find something that you really enjoy and you'll want to latch on to. And there is some great personalities of our hosts and guests, and some great interviews going on there with some excellent topics on sports history. Check it out, sportshistorynetwork.com. And make sure you look us up at pigskindispatch.com. You can email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com and let us know what you think. We love to hear your opinion. We love to hear from you, and we'll always answer your emails. So tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that. Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.